Welcome to Pandemic USA, an Eyes on the Street audio document about what it's like living in the United States with the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Joe Scott.
I'm Jasmine O'Connell.
And we are your hosts for today by virtue of social distancing. There really is no one I could get to host a show with me live for recording but you. Besides my 3-year-old daughter or your son, who's a teenager, who definitely does not want to host a podcast.
He does not.
And then a cat who, despite the fact that they are a cat and they do like attention, probably could not host a podcast.
He's not great at that.
Not great at a lot of things, I would say. But really, again, just the goal of the show really is we're living in a pretty strange time. And one of the ways we document a lot of things now is through podcasts and audio recordings. And I just thought it might be helpful for a lot of people to have this document, to also just hear how we're doing and share their stories as well. And we'll give you an opportunity to do that a little later. I want to start things off with our first segment, which is the question of the week. And I think really we're at day 9 of this pandemic. This is Sunday. We're recording this on Sunday, March 22nd. And that would make it day 9 if in your mind it began a week from Thursday. But what made it real for you on that Thursday?
So I would say that it became real for me actually much earlier than that. So I work in healthcare IT, and I was scheduled to go to a large national healthcare IT conference the week of March 9th. It's called HIMSS, if there's any healthcare IT people out there. And the week before that, there was a lot of back and forth about would this conference be canceled. There'd been a lot of large conferences that were starting to get canceled in that time frame. And the Thursday or Friday before that, that would be March 5th or 6th, they did go ahead and cancel the conference. This is a conference that draws, you know, 45,000 people. The president was actually scheduled to speak at the conference. It's
President Trump.
And so the cancellation was a pretty big deal. And I think that was a wake-up call for a lot of people in healthcare, actually, that this was a real thing that was a real concern. And I think they canceled it because they had so many vendors drop out, so many big names, Microsoft, Adobe, Cisco, so many of the people that make the conference what it is just decided not to come.
I think, you know, if they decided to just plow ahead and go through with that conference, just it really could have been a potential disaster. I mean, these are healthcare professionals. They all come to this conference. When it's over, they all go back home to the hospitals where they work. If they're sick, they're just swapping germs like Pokemon cards. And yeah, I'm glad that they did cancel that. I was amazed, too, because apparently they never canceled it in how many years?
58 years.
Wow.
And conference crud, you know, it's a thing whether you're at, you know, sort of like a comic book convention or a professional conference. But it's definitely a next level situation. By the end of that week, my company had decided to send people to work from home. So we started almost 100% work from home on the 16th. So that's, I work in a what is essentially a consulting firm. We don't typically call it that, but that is a term that people understand. And when I describe what we do and how it works, it's often confusing for people. But we are able to do a lot of our work remotely, and people typically work in the normal times 1 day a week from home. So we went 100% remote for most of the company on the 16th. So that was a big change for us. And I'm extremely grateful that our leaders were kind of on the curve or a little bit ahead of the curve and willing to let us do that.
Yeah, I think that you're very fortunate to have a job at a very proactive company that saw this as a thing and not just an existential threat that liberals cooked up, just like global warming. They said, hey, you guys can work from home. You should work from home. And, you know, it makes me think of a question, too, which is, after all this is over, what happens to the office once it's been revealed to a lot of people who've been adamant that we all get up every morning, get washed, put on our finest clothes, and go to our different jobs at our different offices and other situations? Could this be the thing that convinces them, hey, people could be working remotely. We're wasting a lot of money renting these huge office buildings. We could really just have a smaller space with some empty cubes for people who need to work on site, and then a conference room for our meetings, and let that be it. What do you think about that?
It's interesting. You know, I think the cost, with companies, it tends to be cost savings that's compelling. That's why we went from offices to cubes to, you know, open workspaces and companies that adopted that approach. So I think the idea of sending people home might be even more compelling from a cost savings perspective. For me personally, I am working at the end of the kitchen table. I don't have some luxurious home office setup. So I think there is definitely, for me, going to be some upsides to going back to the office. I have an actual office with a door that closes, and it's pretty nice. So I think even though I don't miss the commute right now, I do kind of miss my actual office. But everyone's situation is different, and I think there are some benefits to being face-to-face with people, and I think a lot of companies are going to start reevaluating how much of a benefit that truly is.
Yeah. You know, in terms of my own situation when this became real, I picked a week from Thursday. The date is March 12th. 2020, because that is the date when basketball shut down. You know, and I think, you know, I'm a North Carolinian, and I'm liberal AF, and, you know, we're always fighting these quote-unquote existential threats. That's what they call it when you care about someone that's not rich and white. And I remember very distinctly, you know, when they passed this bathroom bill, which for those of you who aren't up on North Carolina history, it was a law they put in place to restrict access to bathrooms based on gender, and was specifically targeting transgender people. And, you know, they passed this law. It was a hateful, stupid, dumb law. You know, it equated, I think, going to the bathroom with sexual activity, which is just dumb. It was just... the law was more perverse than anything that the people who put it in place thought they were going to stop. And, you know, we were trying to fight this bill, fight this bill, fight this bill. What really brought this bill down was the NCAA saying, hey, we're not going to host any more tournaments here. And if you guys keep up with the shenanigans, we're probably not going to have any more teams affiliated in your state, which meant that we would have lost basketball. And, you know, this bill was put in place by a governor, and his reelection campaign was in 2016, which was a year our state went hard red. Our state voted for Trump. Our state voted for a lot of Republicans all over the place. But there is one Republican who lost that election, and it was our former governor, Pat McCrory, because they equated what he did to threatening basketball. And once basketball is affected in North Carolina, it becomes real for so many people, which on one hand is not great. I hate that it takes the ability to affect basketball to make something real for people. On the other hand, you know, I am glad that we do have that clear alarm that at least the people who run the NCAA and the NBA get together, they make these decisions, And then suddenly everyone listens. And when the NCAA decided they had to make changes to the tournaments they were hosting as part of their annual championships, suddenly a lot of North Carolinians listened. This included people that I worked with. You know, I had some colleagues at work who just really thought this was all being blown out of proportion, that this was a, quote, panic or a, quote, hoax. And, you know, it became really politicized in the beginning. But, you know, it seemed like that on that date, it became less of a politicized thing and more of just a real thing, a tangible thing that suddenly people started to believe in and react to. And, yeah, for me, that is when all of this became real. Even though I believed it was real, like, it was sort of like this giant punching fist, like, coming down at us in slow motion. And I saw it, you know, since Christmas, I'm like, oh, man, we need to do something about this. We need to do something about this. We need to do something about this. And then finally, and hopefully not too late, we did. But, yeah. Our next segment is a status update, and what we're trying to find out, really, from each of us, and then later on, maybe from each of you, is how are you doing? What is up with you? So, Jasmine, how are you doing? What's up with you?
So, you know, we talked about a little bit that I am working remotely now. I have a sort of full-time in an office type of job where my normal routine is get up, commute for 40 minutes, work in an office, attend a lot of meetings, and then commute home. So now I'm at home all the time, and I'm incredibly grateful. I'm incredibly grateful that I have the opportunity to do that, to stay working, that my company recognizes that the people working for them can work from home, that it trusts them to do that work from home. I think it really speaks to the culture of our company and to the quality of our leadership that we're able to do that. But I will say it is still sort of an adjustment to do that. So trying to get used to sort of being at the house all the time. I am more of an introvert, but it's just a lot fewer people in my life, a lot fewer interactions. But I would say mostly my life right now is like working and then doing some chores around the house and maybe taking a walk, which is not, and then some media consumption, which does not feel like a terribly rich experience, which is okay. Like, that's what we need to be doing right now. So I think all of that is completely fine, and this is not a complaint in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, I think it's sort of the experience that many of us are having. One thing I will say is that I think I went into the period of working from home with this idea that I would have a lot more time and a lot more energy than I normally have, and I was like, this is an opportunity to like do crafts and do new other things. And that has not been my experience. I have not experienced like a lot more time or energy. And I think that the truth is I am working just as much, if not more. And there is a lot of just honestly fear and anxiety. So that takes up a lot of energy. And I think it's okay for all of us to sort of recognize that regardless of what your work situation is, if you are not suddenly turning into like the world's greatest knitter or, you know, reorganizing your house or whatever things you feel like you should be doing with your time right now, that that's perfectly okay. It's okay to just get through the day and hold it together.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we tried actually to practice, I guess, some social distancing abroad yesterday. We thought it would be nice to go on a little hike and a little hiking trail here. But when we got to the place we were going to go, it was swamped with people.
Yeah, there were so many people there.
Yeah, so we just, it was sort of like, almost like a scene from a horror film, like from Invasion of the Body Snatchers. We sort of got out, we saw just hordes of people. Like, within my eye line, I saw 100 people. So I was like, we just kind of slow motion walked back to the car and hit the gas. And tires are squealing. And we got out of there because...
it was not social distancing.
It wasn't at that point. I mean, I'm glad that people are doing that, you know, where they're not sharing surfaces versus say, hey, let's all go to play putt-putt golf or go-karts that day or...
For sure.
You know, we've had people go to the movies and other things, and I'm glad that they made that choice. But even then, I think that that is not social distancing. That's not what people should be doing. And, you know, I hate that because I do love to just walk in nature. But if I know a bunch of people are going to be out there, I might have to cut that out for a while. As for my own status update, you work at a place where they've decided 100% that you can work from home. I'm at a place where they've decided it's almost sort of a 50-50 situation. I have joint custody of my kid. She's 3 years old. And so I work from home on the days that she's with me. And on the days when she's with her other parent, I have to go into the office, and I feel like I'm there more just for the morale of the people who would have to work there, no matter what. It's a retail company, and we do have people who have to do retail work, and, you know, they kind of made retail workers the front line for a lot of things, but I think also my company... There are a lot of people who just have very traditional ideas of what work is, and they don't trust that work is being done if you're at home, you know, and it's interesting. I'm just going to practice a little bit of candor here because I feel like I get more work done when I'm at home than I do when I'm in the office right now, because when I'm in the office right now, like, my stress toxins are just jacked. Like, I'm like, I hear someone cough, and then I'm like, just like, oh man. And I'm just trying to navigate through the building without touching anything. It's sort of like I put both arms behind my back and just fold them, kind of like an armless ninja, just jumping over things and trying to like open doors with my feet and not come into contact with any surfaces. Not try to touch my face, which becomes very painful, honestly. And, you know, I'll avoid TMI, but I try not to go to the bathroom. You know, I try to use that lunch break as my opportunity to go home really quick. I live close to where I work and use the restroom, eat some lunch, and then I go right back at it. But... You know, the idea that I'm more productive there, I think, is a little crazy because I'm spending a good 50% of that time now mentally just wrestling with just existential dread, just tension and fear. But you're right when you say, you know, when you're working from home, I think a lot of people approach that thinking this is the beginning of the new renaissance, you know, that a lot of great... novels are going to be written at this time, and maybe they will be by the people who were furloughed or laid off and get on hopefully whatever government assistance they can get out to people soon. Maybe, but for the people who do have to work from home, it is work. And on the days I'm working from home, I'm also taking care of a 3-year-old, so I kind of have to, I call it Oreo stack my day, and I have to get up at 5 a.m. and really just start working then before my kid wakes up, because when she wakes up, there's things she needs. She needs to eat. I set her up with a tablet. I'm not one of those tablet parents, but I was like, all right, if there's any time where like, I need to just pacify my kid. It's with a tablet. Sesame Street created these wonderful educational games. So I've got her on the tablet, learning her colors, her numbers, her shapes, her sizes. But she, and that manages to keep her engaged, I think, till lunch and then nap time. And then nap time, I'm able to sort of work again, solely focused on what I'm doing. Then once she's up from the nap, it's kind of done. She really doesn't want a tablet. She wants to play. She wants to move around. So I do that with my afternoon. And then when I put her to bed at night, I then go back to work until about 10 or 11 when I'm just exhausted. And it's definitely not an easy time. And I'm sure there's lots of parents of small children who are dealing with the same thing. And like you said, it's okay that you're not writing the great American novel or, you know, completing that film script that you've always dreamed of doing. You know, now is just the time to do what you got to do to stay involved. The one last thing I'll say is that you know, I've tried to cultivate a wellness routine that includes getting up in the morning, early morning, and just going for a jog. So I go for a jog. I'm noticing that it seems like people in cars are being a little bit more aggressive to people who are jogging. I think they're not used to encountering anyone on the road, and so they're driving a lot faster right now. So if you're out jogging, just be aware that maybe people aren't being as careful because they think they're driving in Walking Dead times. Then I also will take a walk in the afternoon. And then one of the other things I did to get ready for this was I busted out an old Wii Fit setup. So I've been playing Wii Fit. I've especially been doing that with my kid in the evening just to get her moving around and jumping and exercising in the evening just to help get some of those like little kid wiggles out before her bedtime. But the wellness routine, I think it's definitely been important for me just, you know, getting my mind off of everything that's going on and just also just trying to take care of myself, which I hope everyone's trying to do in some way. So the one thing I will add is if you have a status update, give us a call. We want to hear how you're doing, what you're doing to get through all of this, what's on your mind, what you're seeing. Doesn't matter. Just give us a call. The number is 336-355-7180. The number again is 336-355-7180. Just leave us a message. We'll play some of those on our next podcast. We would love to just hear from you and just connect in the ways that we can right now in this very mandatory period of social distancing. Now for our next segment, what we're streaming. A media diet is essential right now. Unfortunately, we do live in the era of streaming. Imagine if they had to go through this. This is sort of funny. This is, I think you referred to this as my diamond shoes are too tight. But imagine having to go through this during the era of VHS where we grew up. And like, especially old school VHS when the tapes were like $50 to $100 each. And so every household had like three movies. Imagine having to go through this. Then versus now when we have a lot of choices. It's amazing. But one of the interesting things that happened is because movie theaters are basically a bloodbath right now, financially, they've shut down all the major theater chains. The movie companies are like, screw it. Let's just put the movies on streaming. So they've put out like four brand new movies that were in theaters for the first time, like less than 2 weeks ago. They put them all on streaming, and we managed to catch a few of those. There was one that I watched mostly by myself, Invisible Man. Jasmine is not a fan of horror films.
That one in particular is not for me.
That one in particular, but typically you're not.
No,
you're not like, oh, I want to see the newest scary movies. I watched this mainly by myself, and it was a very well-made movie, a very, technically polished, thematically sound movie, had a great performance, by Peggy Olson. It had a great performance by Peggy Olson from Mad Men. She was awesome. But then, you know, what's interesting is I can admit that objectively, that is a very good movie. Where there's another movie we watched that objectively I would say it had some issues, but I actually liked it more. It was called The Hunt.
I did watch The Hunt with you.
Yeah, so describe The Hunt and your experience watching The Hunt.
I think, so The Hunt is sort of, I would say it's not a movie to take seriously. And I think it is a movie that is a little bit confused about what it's trying to say, or at least as someone watching it, I didn't come away with a clear understanding of the point that it was trying to make. It's clearly a satire, but I, at the end, was not understanding who it was trying to satirize. But it is, I found it sort of fun to watch anyway, and I think that is almost entirely due to the main actress, who just gives this really sort of understated performance.
Betty Gilpin.
Betty Gilpin. In the midst of all of this sort of over-the-top nonsense, her performance is just really sort of almost closed in on itself and
razor-focused.
Yeah, yeah. And it just really helps elevate some material that's kind of stupid.
You know, it was interesting because just like I felt like the movie itself didn't know what it was about, and it was written by Nick Cuse and Damon Lindelof, who wrote Lost, a show that ultimately, after nearly 10 years of watching it, you find out, oh, this doesn't know what it's about either.
Right.
They worked together on this, and this movie doesn't know what it's about. But despite that fact, I felt like Betty Gilpin knew at least what her character was about.
Yes. So
she gives you this like really compelling action hero character. Like, honestly, I was like, I would love to watch 15 Betty Gilpin action thrillers. Like, if we were in the 80s right now, I would make her like the new like Chuck Norris type star of like 15 movies where she's just driving around the South, kicking meth dealers in the head, like just cool stuff. But, yeah, she was so compelling in a movie that without her probably would have been unwatchable entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely, you know, and it was sort of a play on The Most Dangerous Game a little bit. Like you have liberal elites hunting, I wouldn't even say conservatives so much as just sort of red state citizens, people from red state parts of our country. And in the process of hunting them, they're trying to entrap them in the reasons why they deserve to die. You know, like, so you believe global warming is a hoax, right? Or you believe this and that. You think the coronavirus is a joke, right? I'm joking there. You know, what's interesting is that Betty Gilpin plays a character who's, you know, very salt of the earth, probably does not vote the way that I do, but she at least says, I'm a human being. I've lived my own experiences. I deserve a right to live as much as anybody. And, you know, in a movie that seemed to lack empathy overall, like, she was there to say, hey, like, I'm worthy of your empathy. You know, I've read some of the same books that you, quote-unquote, elites have read. And that to me was actually the best part is they drop some literary reference on her. Like, it's going to just fly right over her head. And then she sort of stops the movie and starts to engage in this literary discussion of George Orwell's Animal Farm.
I wonder if this needs spoiler alerts.
No, not at all. It's not a spoiler.
I do feel like some of that stuff, I think the movie thinks that's a spoiler, first of all. But I feel like that almost, yeah, I think the movie's very confused about what it's trying to be and who it's trying to make fun of. Because there's what I think the movie thinks is a twist at the end, and it kind of makes none of the rest of it make any sense.
Yeah.
In my estimation. But I will say, you know, there's a lot of sort of like gory nonsense and people shooting each other and a single really competent performance that makes all of that stuff fun, if you like that sort of thing.
Digestible.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a huge fan of that kind of thing generally, but I thought it was fun for that kind of a movie.
Yeah. The next movie that we watched, we actually didn't watch all of it during the pandemic. We started to watch Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. Before all of this, we started to watch it. Then my kid woke up from her nap. I'm like, all right, well, I need to turn this off. For those of you who've watched a Jay and Silent Bob movie written by Kevin Smith, directed by Kevin Smith, you understand why that would be a bad idea. But we watched the rest of it. And I used to be a big Jay and Silent Bob film fan. I feel like Kevin Smith is almost like the Green Day of male cinema nerds, in that, you know, he sort of gets you interested in cinema, and then you start to watch other movies and become less interested, in the way I think that a lot of 13-year-old Green Day fans started listening to more punk rock and indie rock and became less interested in Green Day. Hopefully, you know, some of them never get beyond that, and I feel like that's the same for some Kevin Smith fans too, and that's fine.
It's a really harsh take on Green Day.
It's a harsh take on Green Day. It's a harsh take on Kevin Smith, but it's just my lived experience all the same, and I'm not going to apologize for it. But, you know, we're watching this movie, and, you know, it kind of starts a little awkwardly, but then there's this nice turn in the middle, especially when a very important cameo happens. I don't want to spoil, but and it's sort of a reflection on fatherhood, and there's this whole monologue, and I, you know, as a dad, I was very touched by that. But then I felt like the movie just completely, once you get past that point, it segues into just sort of narrative anarchy. Like, everything's just sort of lost again. Like, anything that I liked about the movie was just kind of immediately just hacked to death. And it was over. Would you say that that's a good summation of that movie?
It's been a long time since I've seen, like, the original Jay and Silent Bob movie. I don't even remember if there was one of these or more than one of these originally.
Several.
So it's been a while. But what this reminded me of, and there was even a cameo by one of these guys in it. What this reminded me more of was the Cheech and Chong movie, which is not like, tends not to be so narratively cohesive. It's just like, there's sort of a narrative through line, but it's more like, here's a bunch of vignettes of stuff that's happening with a not so cohesive narrative through line. And that's kind of more what this felt like to me, is it's like, here's something that's happening. Here's something else that's happening. Here's something else that's happening. And it kind of felt like that to me. Like, it's just a bunch of, like, we're going to remember all the stuff that you liked about all of these movies and throw it together in a big blender and serve it back up to you. I mean, it was very fan service-y. Like, I'm not very steeped in that world, but I was like, oh, yeah, I think this is a thing that if you were into these movies, you would be like, hey, there's the thing. So I don't think it was for me. That I think if you were into it, you would recognize it and appreciate that you were being serviced by these moments. You know what I'm saying?
It winks at you a lot.
Yeah.
Literally, the people in the movie stop to look at the camera and wink at you.
Yeah.
At least three times. So, take that.
You get some big name cameos in there.
Yeah. Yeah. The last movie I want to talk about is one that I kind of drag you into kicking and screaming a little bit. I saw a preview. So there were several different previews, and I saw one preview of this film called Troop Zero. It's a film about a Girl Scout troop. And the preview,
they're Birdie Scouts, not Girl Scouts.
Right, Birdie Scouts, because I guess
can't use the Girl Scout name.
Troop Zero, which is about a Girl Scout adjacent group of girls from small town in Georgia, Wiggly, Georgia, in 1977. And the trailer I saw was very Viola Davis focused. She's in the movie. She's great in the movie. She was great in this preview I saw. I was like, oh, that movie looks good. And then I was like, hey, we should watch this movie. And we pulled it up on the Amazon Prime menu. And it's just the picture of these two little girls. And you're like, no, absolutely not. I hate movies with children. And so I was like, no, no, let's watch the preview, thinking that this would be the same preview I saw. But this preview was very, like, children from the movie focused. And you're like, yeah, still not convinced that this is a movie I need to see. And I was like, all right, let's watch just 20 minutes of the movie. And if you think we should turn it off, then we can do it. But
this is always your tactic. You're like, let's watch 20 minutes, which is just long enough to get invested.
And so here's the question, Jasmine. Did you get invested?
Yeah, I did. So I don't typically like to watch movies about kids doing stuff. I don't know. I guess my blackened heart has hardened to the point where I just don't enjoy precocious kids doing stuff anymore, typically. And I'm, you know, like, we were just watching a bunch of different things, and this was fine as background, generally. But it had a whole bunch of stuff that is usually no thanks for me. It was, like, a bunch of kids in the South, in the past, a lot of accents, a lot of folksiness. Usually that's all a big no for me. I mean, it was fine.
I thought it was a very charming movie. I thought it was very winning. And I thought really the secret to its sauce, the secret sauce for this movie is the same as The Hunt, really, where you had this one central performance. There's this young actress named McKenna Grace, who I thought just was so natural. Like, she was just so natural in front of the camera. She wasn't really putting on an act like the way a lot of child actors do. She was very relaxed. She was playing a character as a little bit of an oddball. And she was just great. It was really compelling. You know, Jim Gaffigan plays her dad, and he's not a Southerner. And he uses a Southern accent, Southern dialect, which was horrible. It was as bad as the wig on his head. And the wig on his head was horrible as well. It would have almost been great to reveal that it was a wig. I think that would have made the movie feel a little bit more natural.
There were a lot of bad wigs in The Hunt as well, I think it's important to note.
Yeah, it was a bad wig week in terms of our streaming consumption. But the movie was great. The children were very well directed, very well cast. And, you know, you get this wonderful dynamic scene at the end of the movie where they're trying to perform a talent show. Because the winner of this talent show...
Don't spoil.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but the winner of the talent show gets to be recorded as part of the gold record. We're putting on a satellite to send into space. And the main actress, like, she loves space. She loves science. This is, like, her dream. And so there's a talent show, and the movie sort of paints it all into this awkward corner. I was like, oh, great. Dude, this is dumb. But then the turnout from that corner, the thing they do... was just, I thought it was perfect. I was like, wow, this is amazing. I thought this was a great ending. This ended better than either of the three movies I'd seen today.
The writing is really high quality.
The writing is high quality. It's written by the people who wrote The Beasts of the Southern Wild, which is a movie I loved a lot. That movie made me cry. This movie... Troop Zero had me tearing up a little bit as well. I'm not going to hide the fact that I was kind of like, oh.
No tears here.
No tears for you. But you laughed. And
it was cute. It was cute.
You laughed harder than that than you did at Jay and Silent Bob.
No question. Yeah. Jay and Silent Bob was not actually a funny movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good.
The adult performances in Troop Zero were great. Viola Davis was great. Allison Janney was in it. She was great.
The lady from the Righteous Gemstones. She's in it for a second. She was perfect. Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The women in the movie were great. Mike Epps was also in the movie and he was great.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Gaffigan, great comedian. I don't know if I quite believe he should be acting at all.
Yeah.
And that's all I'll say.
Sorry, Jim.
You got a chance to play a brand new video game. You know, living in this pandemic, one of the saviors for a lot of people has been video games. You know, and a lot of people are touting video games as the thing they're playing a lot of right now as they're forced to stay at home instead of whatever they're doing outside of their homes. And you got to play one of the biggest video game releases of the year so far, Animal Crossing New Horizons. So what did you think of Animal Horizons? Let me stop that again. You got to play one of the biggest games of the year so far.
I did. Doom, that's right, Doom. No, you're talking about the new Animal Crossing game.
Yeah, for Nintendo Switch. What do you think about that game? You've never played an Animal Crossing game before, so what was that like?
So I am bringing to Animal Crossing a long and storied history with The Sims. And I am not currently set up to play The Sims. I don't have a computer that runs it. I don't really have access to a PS4 where I can play it or an Xbox or anything like that. And so I think that is sort of coloring my experience with Animal Crossing. There's no way for me to do, like, karaoke in Animal Crossing. So I think it's really charming. It's cute. The ramp up has felt a little slow in terms of starting to play it. Feels like there's kind of a lot of, like, grinding, and it's not always clear what I'm supposed to be doing to move up into the next level or to obtain the new items or to do whatever. So I don't know. Maybe I need to watch more YouTube videos on how to play it or something.
It seems like a lot of people are doing what's called time traveling, where they're changing the date and time settings on their Switches and re-logging back into the game to sort of advance things very quick. I've seen screenshots of other people's progress, and they've built amazing New Horizons, to borrow from the game's subtitle. So kudos to them, I guess. I feel like that is cheating.
So I think it's interesting that the time in the game passes the same as time in real life, and there's no in-game way to sort of move that forward. That feels a little bit like a lot of mobile games to me, where you're forced to sort of wait for things to build or accrue or develop or whatever. And they do that in mobile games as a way to get you to pay for things so you can speed it up. But there's not even a way to really do that here. You just have to wait. And it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, I'm not saying I don't like it. I am definitely giving it a chance. And it is really cute and charming. And I'll keep playing it and see, you know, what it's like. Maybe this is an opportunity. If people don't want to give a status update, they can call in and tell me how I'm playing Animal Crossing wrong.
Yeah, and that number again, if you want to really just check our woefully inadequate Animal Crossing skills, is 336-355-7180. You can also just tell us what you're streaming. Are you streaming anything good? What should we be watching? Let us know. So, there you go. Our next segment is The Message, and I'm a preacher's kid, and I'm going to do everything I can to avoid being preachy. It's really hard, because I was preached at every day for the first 19 years of my life. But the message today is, if you see something, do something. I think that our social-mediated lives have sort of put us in a place where when we see something we don't like, we just say something. You know, and you find a lot of people who use social media to express themselves. I do it all the time. And a lot of times, especially right now, in response to the pandemic, I'm seeing a lot of expressions of anger, a lot of expressions of, you know, frustration and stress. You know, people are mad at a lot of different people. This includes our president. This includes our North Carolina U.S. Senator Richard Burr, who may have or may not have engaged in inside trading with knowledge he gained to basically game the system while leaving Americans completely oblivious to the potential dangers we're facing. And I get it. All of that makes sense. You know, be angry if you want to, but I would challenge you to do something else, which is a lot harder than being angry, which is to just do something. You know, and that could be tipping the people you know in the service industry. You know, all of the restaurants have been ordered to close down their inside seating areas, which means that most of these businesses, whether they're national chains or locally owned businesses that we all love, more than half of their workforce is now left without an income. You know, waiters and waitresses, they don't get paid an hourly wage like a lot of jobs offer. You know, it's a service industry job. Minimum wage is usually around $3, $4, $5 because you're supposed to make the difference with tips. You know, and if I used to own a coffee shop, and so I developed a lot of relationships with customers, and I watched those customers developed a lot of relationships with my employees. And, you know, you make those friendships, you make those acquaintanceships. If you are acquainted or friendly with anyone you know from a favorite business of yours, check in on them. I guarantee a lot of them are struggling. And if they are, just, you know, kick them a little bit of money via Venmo. Tell them, do not pay you back, especially if you're working. If you're working, definitely. If you're struggling like they are, I'm not saying, you know, struggle even more. But if you are working like I am, do what I did. And I just reached out to a few people that I knew and tried to help them out, you know, because it's not an easy time. You know, the other thing is doing what you can, if you can do anything at all, to preserve economic stability for others. You know, I had my kid in daycare when all of this became real. I pulled my kid out of daycare. And even then, you know, there are daycare workers who have to go in and continue working. And, you know, I checked in on my daycare. I checked in with my kid's daycare teacher and found out really quickly that all the parents had pulled their kids out and none of the parents were paying their balance for their daycare. So I was like, all right, I'm going to let you know that I'm paying for daycare. For as long as I'm getting paid, I'm going to continue paying for daycare. And if daycare closes, then I'm just going to pay you directly. And then beyond that, I just messaged all the parents that I knew and told them, hey guys, we got to just keep paying for your daycare. Like any parent who was fortunate enough to find like a good daycare. And, you know, my daycare is not super expensive. It's not like one of these prestigious daycares, but it's a really good daycare. And I think part of that is because the teachers are so great. They're engaged. They actually care about the kids. And so I just said, hey, guys, let's keep paying. Let's keep these people who've helped our children so many times out of a desperate situation, because, you know, to date, our government, our national government has, they've offered stimulus to banks, to the stock market, you know, in just bales of money. But they're still arguing about how to do this just for the working people. And I hate that, you know, and as much as I want to just go on social media and be angry about that, the other thing I'm going to do too while I'm working is to continue just doing what I can to take care of those people. You know, another thing is just a lot of our favorite small businesses. You know, if you're not able to go to your favorite restaurant, if you're not able to go to your favorite store, you know, comic book store, video game store, call up and buy gift cards. Another thing I did too was I had to grab some lunch. I went to a fast food place to grab some lunch. I tipped the lady who worked there. She'd never gotten a tip her entire life, but I was like, you need some money because you're really like keeping this whole crazy capitalistic puzzle of our country together, you know? And she really was just amazed that anyone would think to do that, but just try to do what you can. And let's stop so much with the negativity and just start thinking about ways you can help others, because I think that it's really going to be up to us for a long time until people above us in the hierarchy of our country get their act together. So we're going to just leave the message here and end with our final segment, which is a bit of advice. And it's really just, you know, who are we to give anyone advice? Nobody's. But just going to offer you the most nothing advice, but just a little thing that could maybe make a small difference. Do you have any advice?
So before we started recording, I said I didn't want to give people advice. So I think the what I will say is that it's okay for people to be gentle with themselves and to kind of lower their expectations of themselves. I mentioned earlier that, you know, when the word came down that we were going to be working from home, I created a lot of expectations for myself about what that would mean. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, my normal commute takes up an hour and 20 minutes every day. Therefore, I have an extra hour and 20 minutes that I can be doing all kinds of amazing things with. And the reality is, like, I don't. Like, that time is extra time spent working, because in some ways working from home is less efficient, or I just have more stress and anxiety. And regardless of what your situation is, you may find that, you know, if you're at home all the time, you may think that you're going to be able to do a lot of amazing things. And if you can't, if all you can really do is like stream stuff on television, that's fine. And if you find that you can't even watch new movies, they're too stressful, and all you can do is watch Office reruns, that's fine. Like, don't put pressure on yourself. Just be kind to yourself and do what feels okay right now, because it's a really difficult time, and you don't have to take up knitting. You don't have to reorganize your whole house. You don't have to watch every new movie that's come out. You don't have to watch a bunch of intense documentaries on Netflix. You don't have to do anything that feels too taxing or too difficult. I would say aim to take a shower every day, aim to go outside, and then just do what helps you stay together on a day-to-day basis.
I think that's great advice. The one bit of advice I would have is learn how to make coffee. And
good. Yeah, that's good.
It's important. You know, so we're talking about social isolation. We're talking about really just making decisions that will help slow the curve of this virus so that we don't overwhelm our hospitals. That's really the name of the game. It's really the thing we can do most to help others right now. And I see that everywhere I go, when I'm driving into work, everywhere that is, except for our local Starbucks locations, they are swamped with customers. The drive-thrus are just swamped. There's lines of people that just need coffee, you know. And I think that a lot of people have this idea. We saw this very funny meme where it was just a picture of Little House on the Prairie. And the meme said, me when I make my own coffee at home instead of going to Starbucks. And I think that can certainly feel that way, especially if you don't know how to make coffee. But the one thing I'd recommend is just learn how to make a good cup of coffee. You're going to save a lot of money, which can be very helpful right now. I don't know what our economy is going to be like in 2 or 3 months, but saving is never a bad idea. But the secret to good coffee is really just your water to bean ratio. Just locking down that amount of water to bean. Get a bean grinder if you want to. You know, a lot of snobs say that, you know, real coffee drinkers grind their own beans, but I buy ground coffee really specifically because I have a 3-year-old and I want coffee before I want her to wake up. And if I start grinding beans, then she's up. So I use ground coffee on those days. And I'll say this. As someone that used to own a coffee shop and should be the biggest coffee snob of all, it tastes great. It tastes great. Get your ground coffee, get a food scale of some sort, and just measure it out. Be specific. Find the ratio that works for you. If we're not all too clear about that, maybe I'll make a video tutorial at some point just to show what I do and give you advice on how to do that. But make your own coffee. As essential as coffee is right now, I think going to Starbucks and creating the same pre-pandemic lines and demand for coffee from Starbucks is probably not a great thing right now. So just be mindful. And try to do what you can to rely on yourself instead of others, if you can. And that's the bit of advice for this week. So thank you guys for listening to Pandemic USA. This was episode 1, day 9. And just try to practice that social distance, wash your hands, and think of others.